God in this life of sin. It's a mic and a pen, and a sword I live by that's more mightier than your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Combining times of my 10, still none is nicer than him. The God, true star, Mr. Star, if you're fucking nasty, tip your hat and bow your heads when you fuckers pass me. Salute me, show honor and respect. Respected and I'm honored for my honor and respect of the game and the rules that I honor to the death. Death before dishonor is the code I live by. But nowadays niggas die in dishonorable deaths. I don't know what you niggas doing, but it's a war going on outside. A lot of niggas losing, and make the hardest hood nigga cry. Call it hood genocide, cause all the good niggas die. Wish I could drop a tear, but my sorrow well is dried up. So I keep my head up and my eyes open. Won't get left with my head open and my eyes shut. But that's the way the cookie crumbles when the pie's cut.
Hello?
When
it divides. Can you hear me? I can hear you. Hi.
Awesome. Hey, how you doing?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
I am fantastic. Really, really tired because I was out late last night.
I guess so because it's a Sunday morning.
Yeah, for sure. So I was out really, really late.
And I hope you had fun.
I did. I live in Vegas, so I have a lot of fun all the time.
Okay.
And so, I'm super tired, but I'm excited to be speaking with you.
And, okay, great.
You know, so let's get to this. How are you doing today? Did you have a good night? Did you party and stay out way too late like I did?
I didn't at all. I'm in Lisbon, but I'm here alone, so I don't feel too safe doing that.
I get it.
Like you know, I don't know. I don't like walking the streets at night here.
No, I totally understand. It's a really dangerous world for women in particular. So
yeah, sadly so.
There's some sickles out there. So I totally get that. You know, should not.
Yeah, and if you don't know, like, which part to go and, you know, which area is safe, I'd just rather not.
How long have you been out there?
I've been there for 2 weeks now and have one more to go. And I really love it so far. Yeah, there's a lot to see on daytime, so you don't have to necessarily go out late at night.
No doubt. Where are you originally from?
Germany.
Okay, tight. Yeah, I got some friends in Germany. Germany's dope. I've been meaning to get out there, but everybody that I know that's from there is like pretty cool. So,
yeah, great. So, welcome to the Healer Hip Hop Podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining me. With me today is I Am True Star.
Yes.
For those who don't know you, please introduce yourself a little bit in your own words.
What's going on, everybody? My name is I Am True Star. I know that name is a whole mouthful to say, but, you know, my name is an affirmation for anyone that says it, not just speaking about myself being a true star, but we're all true stars in our own right, you know, making things happen and doing what we got to do for ourselves and for our families on a daily basis. And I feel if you're doing that, you know, you're a true star. So I'm from Rochester, New York, born and raised. I'm a songwriter, artist, rapper, you know, creative, you know, I'm not really super into titles. I just do a lot of things. And yeah, you know, currently live in Vegas, you know, I'm just chilling, man, you know, trying to make the best art possible that I can, you know, and spread my message, spread love with these vibes, you know, nothing too much, you know.
It's interesting that you said you're a rapper, because I would also describe you as a singer in some of your songs.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why I'm not so big with the titles and stuff, right? Because, like, I don't really know what you would classify it either. Like, I just kind of do my own thing, you know? Like, I guess you have traditional rappers, and then you have, like, you know, new rappers and just trap rappers. You have all these different types of things out there, and I just feel like, but, I mean, everybody's seems like they're just kind of on the same wave, or a lot of people, you know, but I kind of just do my own thing, so like I don't really know what to call it.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've listened to your albums while I was walking the streets of Lisbon, and it's very, very difficult, which is good. It's difficult to classify, like, because you do so much and I hear so much inspiration out of it. But before we come to the albums and the music, tell us a little bit about your, like, where you said where you're from, but like in terms of how your life before the music was and how you came into making music.
I think I came out singing, which is weird, like out of my mom, because I've always been, I kind of always was like putting on my own shows around the house or whatever. So music's always been like a part of my life. But I grew up in one of those households where like, and you're singing or whatever, and like your parents is like, shut up, you're making too much noise, you know? So you never really know how dope you are until you get older. But I've always been into this, you know, like this has always kind of been my angle in life. I play sports growing up, you know. I'm from the traditional American ghetto, right? So like kids in the ghetto do certain things. They play sports, they do music, you know what I'm saying? Like we kind of like have those choices at our fingertips very easily, you know? So like a lot of us do that. So I've been doing this forever. But I mean, music is a freaking journey, man. So it's like, before this, I don't really even remember life before chasing this, because I feel like I've been chasing it since I was like 12 years old, 11 years old, you know? So really, I mean, because I've always seen myself in this place, like just making art and singing songs and writing songs, maybe not in this way, but I always knew that I'd be doing this, what I was doing for a living. And I knew I would want to do it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, was there a life before this, like, would you live from?
Sports, sports, and just life in Rochester is pretty rough because, you know, where I'm from is a pretty rough place. So, like, you know, you got, like, you know, your friends growing up that are all into a bunch of things. Like, I got a lot of friends that are in jail now, friends that are dead now. It's just weird, you know, growing up in places like where I'm from. So yeah, I mean,
yeah, I'm asking because as I've said, there are 4 albums so far, 2 EPs and 2 albums that I saw on iTunes.
Yeah,
and listened to, and the first one I guess is called Old Stuff, right?
Yeah.
And there are like, I have like 3 quotes which like point into that direction that you just mentioned. You start with song Joy, and there's this, wish I could drop a tear, but my sorrow well dried up. And then there's the song Night Calls, where you say hope for the hopeless. And that's why I'm asking into the direction, like
that's
your
crazy
life.
I've never really, that's funny to hear like your lyrics read back to you in that way. That's super dope. But, yeah. Okay. So I was, not for nothing, you know, like I was leading up to like growing up in places like where I'm from, you know, you're faced with certain choices. So yeah, I was involved in, some street stuff growing up, that ended up, you know, costing me a lot of my time, I guess, in my early age, from like my early 20s, you know. So, it was crazy, put it like that. So I was involved in, you know, like my neighborhood gangs, and, you know, we did what we did as kids, you know, whether it's selling drugs, freaking just all the bad things. That's why I feel like, you know, my music is not only so much a relief for myself, but for other people, because it's like, you know, I've been through so much, right? I put myself through a lot too. So like, making choices that I know wasn't the right choices as a kid, growing up with my friends, doing things that cost us freedom, time, our lives, cost us our lives. And then having to deal with those consequences, you know what I'm saying? You know, the whole thing of coming home from jail or coming home from prison or dealing with your friends coming home from prison. So, you know, I would say, like, and I don't know if I'm answering your question right, so please, please forgive me. I can go, I swear, I'm long-winded and I can go on tangents, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But, like, I think that's one of my endearing qualities, where some people don't like it. I involved myself in a lot of things, but before music, I don't feel like life was really anything. It was just life in the ghetto, you know, like before this started taking shape and before I started meeting people and really getting out and chasing this thing properly, you know, I was just in Rochester. And when you're from, you know, a small town of like 200,000 people and no one from your generations before has left or nobody that you know has left, it's like you kind of get stuck there. You know what I'm saying? Your whole life in those towns is either how am I going to get out of this place or what am I going to do to stay in this place and make my life as good as it possibly can, you know, because nobody really leaves. You know, I had an uncle that moved to the West Coast when he was 18, and that's the only semblance I knew of anything other than Rochester. You know, all my friends are in Rochester, all my parents and their friends and their kids, you know, so it was just like a community of people that never really leave. I know people in Rochester that don't even have a computer, like to this day. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Like, yeah, my city's kind of really, really messed up, you know, being like the murder capital of New York State. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the worst educational system in New York State, you know, and I got so many amazing things that come out of my city, you know, but it seems like growing up, you only hear about the bad things. You only embrace the bad things, you know, fucking, you know, Frederick Douglass comes out of the city. Kodak comes out of my city. All these great, amazing things. You know, Susan B. Anthony, even though she, from what I hear, she's kind of a racist. But the women's movement comes out of my city, you know. So it's like, it's got the suffragette movement. It's got so many great things. But growing up in it, you don't see any of that stuff. You don't hear any of that stuff. You don't feel any of that greatness. You don't feel the Underground Railroad. What you feel is, you know, your friends, you know, dying, or your friends' parents on drugs, or your parents on drugs. You know, I grew up, my father was on drugs when I was a child, you know, and seeing his whole recovery process through that, you know, I remember going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings with him as a child and just not only seeing his story, but seeing other people's story and just knowing that it was just a whole generation of people before me that felt stuck by the city, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, so.
But there's also this song called Nostalgia, where you sing, being young back then was so much fun, brand new Jordans for them good old grades. So what are those good things you can say or remember from those times?
Childhood? Well, the people.
Community.
Rochester makes a tough version of a person. You know what I'm saying? Even if you're born from here and then you, from Rochester, and then you move, like, you know, the people that, you know, if you're going to be successful, that's kind of what the situation calls for sometimes, you know, right? So, like, when you move out of that small town and get into bigger ponds and chase it, it just makes you a tough person. I mean, some serious, focused individuals almost, and I hate the cliche things, but, like, you can make it out of that place. You know what I'm saying? You really got a lot of tools at your disposal, like survival tools at your disposal to make it anywhere. You won't even notice it until you're put in certain situations because, you know, growing up in places where we grow up, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you can do it, man, you can be anywhere, man. So it's the people, in my opinion, it's the people, you know, it's the people that will never let you forget. Like, let's just say I get big and or whatever, right? And I'll go back home and those people are still, like, treat you exactly the same. You know, now you got to be careful because, you know, there's people that grow up with you that don't want to see you succeed and be all that you were put on this earth to be as well, too, right? So they want to harm you. They want to take that away because your successes are a continual reminder of their failures and shortcomings, right? So it's a tough thing for them to witness. But those people that known you your whole life are going to still talk and joke on you like, you know, like you're nothing. They'll protect you. Like if your loved community and they got your back, those people will never, ever, ever turn their back on you. Some of the most solid and loyal people come out of Rochester. And for the 2 years I've been on the West Coast, all I've ever said was like, I wish I could just pack up all my favorite people from my hometown and move them here, and I'd be great. You know what I'm saying? And I'm super selfish, but like, I need those people. You know what I'm saying? Like, I need to be able to see certain people that I've seen my whole life because they ground me, you know, they help me, they inspire me, you know.
Nice.
It's really strong, beautiful people from Rochester, New York, for sure.
That sounds nice. Good to have. Yeah.
It is.
Your second EP, like the first EP, second album is Hair Like Basquiat.
Yes, ma'am.
Which I loved a lot, which was totally different than the album before. And I think this is like the first time I heard you sing.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me about how that came about. Like, it's a whole theme. It's about,
It was a lot of things going on. I mean, it was 2014. So, you know, the world changes so fast, you know, and the world was like, the social media was, I feel like social media just hit like its apex around that time, where you just had been bombarded with all of these images, right? So, you know, one of the major images that kept coming across my face and my eyes and a lot of my friends' eyes was like a lot of the killings that were going on, police killings, right? Police killing, you know, citizens and unarmed citizens, stuff like that. And it was just a weird time for a lot of people. And, you know, you got this self-love movement and everything going on. Now, me personally, I've always been really into who I am and trying to learn to love myself and, you know, be a better version of myself every day, right? So Hair Like Basquiat was just about me. Like, when I looked at images and when I looked at the people in the world and out there in the world, I wanted to successful people. I wanted to see me. You know, I wanted to see a representation of me. So, you know, I was like, well, what if Jesus had hair like Basquiat? Meaning, what if this white figure of salvation and savior or messiah or what have you, you know, what if he looked like me? What would that do to people who look like me when you can see your image in that, right? Representation is very important. So it was more so just about us loving ourselves as ourselves. So as an artist, I kind of felt like I was holding back a little bit. So I wanted to rap, and I just wanted to show everybody that I was rapping and I was a good rapper, but I had so much more to offer. And I felt even myself as an artist, I wasn't being all the way true with myself by holding myself back. I felt like I was leaving stuff leaving it on the court, you know, like, hold up, I can do all of these things. And I didn't want to be competing with rappers on who is the greatest rapper and being critiqued in that way, because I feel like sometimes it takes away from the art. It takes away from all this stuff that the artist had to go through to write that song that you're critiquing so hard. Like, this is their life, you know? So I felt like if this is going to be my life and, you know, I'm going to be like true and contrite, not just in my life personally, but in my art, I got to do me. So I had a studio. I kind of locked myself in and just started developing my own sound and, you know, just being free to just do it instead of confining myself. Like, no, you can't do it like that because you got to rap and you got to show people that you can rap. You got to show that the bars, you feel me? And it was just, I felt like I was holding myself back with that. You know, I wasn't doing what I'm supposed to do. I have a lot more to give, you know, I have a lot more to give myself as an artist, but also as a person, you know, so I wanted to be all the way 100 with myself and love myself properly. And now I look at my hair and I have hair like Basquiat. And it's really weird because my dreads are everywhere and they're free form and they're nuts. And I didn't do it on purpose. It just feels like I was talking that stuff into existence because, you know, I want little brown boys and brown girls to love themselves wholly. I want them to see themselves more than just the unsavory characters on these movies and these TV shows, you know, because that's a part of our conditioning that we don't even notice is taking place very, very young. And it shapes how we look at the world and how we see ourselves inside of that world, you know. And now having a son that's 1 year old, I start to see that more and more. I start to see the effects of that stuff more and more because I want him to know how beautiful and amazing of a little boy he is. you know, without any interference, without people trying to tell him what kind of little boy he needs to be because he's brown, what kind of little boy he has. He can be whatever beautiful, amazing little boy he wants to be because he's going to see more representation of himself being in these mediums. He's going to see brown boys that are emotional and are able to express their emotions on television shows. He's going to see brown boys that are superheroes that fight and save the world. And he doesn't have to just see Clark Kent and the beautiful 6'2" tall built white man coming to save everything. It's not a race thing. It's a representation thing. I want him to see himself, you know, absolutely, more so. More yeah. so than just me telling him how beautiful he is. He's got to see it in these mediums that hold more regard than just the words of his parents. Like, you stop listening to your parents after a while. After a while, it's the music and it's the art and it's the entertainment and it's your friends and all that stuff.
So absolutely.
I want his world to reflect that so he can see himself beautifully. I named my son Truth. You know what I'm saying? So I want him... I want him and all of the future black and brown boys and girls, you know, because this world isn't safe for us. You know, this world isn't safe for women. And that's a shame that you are in such a beautiful place like Lisbon, you know, and you don't feel safe walking around. And that's something, you know, you recognize that and you reshape and recondition your whole life around that. And that fucking sucks. Like, you should be able to go out and do whatever the fuck you want. And you should be able to enjoy a beautiful ass city like Lisbon. To be honest, I didn't even know where the fuck that was at. And so I first started talking to you. I was looking it up. That place is gorgeous.
It is.
What do you mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? I feel it fucking sucks. I want to fly out there and make sure you could go party. Fuck, go party the way you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's bullshit, you know? So, but that's the truth. And that's one of those truths that women and black and brown kids have to deal with as life on this earth. You know what I'm saying? It's just certain truths that we just have to deal with.
Yeah, and, sadly, that's true. Like, my son is half African. And okay. I'm originally from Eastern Germany, where there are more like racist people, I guess, than in average
West
Germany. Yeah. Okay. And when I take him to my hometown, this is where he's exclusively like experienced racist. I don't know. Yeah. He's been told racist things that he didn't experience where we usually live. Sadly so. Yeah. And I hope there's not more to come, but I think there's more to come. He's 14 now, and he will travel too on his own. And
well, he's 14. He's getting scary looking to people now.
Yeah, and I hate having to think of these things or having to prepare him for these things. He sees it on TV. He's not too much affected yet. I'm pretty confident, but I don't know. Yeah, it sucks he even has to think of these things. Yeah.
And my heart goes out to you as a mother and a parent because you have to deal with that every day he leaves the door. Every day he leaves the house, you got to wonder how they're looking at him and how they view him. You know, 14-year-old boys, I mean, I'm 6'2", 240 pounds. I may not have been this heavy at 14. I'm athletic build, like I'm saying. I can dunk and shit. Like, so I don't carry it bad. Like, I'm like a athletic built dude, but like I can understand how scary I may look to certain people. And that's just because their conditioning that's what I'm saying, representation matters so much because they've watched the same movies that I watched as a kid. And they've seen the role of that black male one and black male two be played out the same way that I have. So the way I see it, you know what I'm saying? And what I look at and when I see that, I'm like, damn, you know, they see a scary person and I'm seeing, you know, Thug One, you know, or I'm just seeing guys from my neighborhood. They see Thug One. I'm seeing guys from my neighborhood. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
They're not comfortable with that image at all. They don't understand. That's just the guy. He just is at the store all the time. He's going to buy his cigarettes. of course he's 6'3", because genetically there's just tall motherfuckers around here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He just genetically there's just tall, athletic motherfuckers around here. But
yeah,
like he looks like a monster to you. You're scared. You clutch your purse. It's like, and with gentrification, and especially in places like New York, like our worlds are going to clash in a way, and our inner cities are clashing now, right? So you got people that have always been in these neighborhoods, and you got people moving to these neighborhoods that don't understand the neighborhood. They just have the imagery that they've seen all their lives in every movie, in every TV show, and maybe those few encounters in high school, maybe those few encounters in college, because we know when we go to high school and college, we group off. You know, we shape our worlds. We hang out with people that reflect the world and the way we see ourselves inside of it. You know, so they use that as that's what they think. So now they're living in Brooklyn and, you know, this scary guy that's been there their whole life, they're calling the police on him. What do you mean? Mm-hmm. I live here.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you to call the police on me? you're the visitor. You know,
yeah.
It sucks. It sucks. And it sucks that you got a 14-year-old boy. Because he's a boy. That's what he is. He's a boy. He is a child. He's somebody's child. He's your child. And he has to, I mean, I don't know. He's made to not feel safe in a world where apparently he makes people not feel safe. It's fucking nuts. It's a never-ending cycle for him that he has to grow up and live under those guidelines. That's going to totally shape the way he sees himself and the world. And it's going to continue to do that. That 14-year-old boy that's going to be called nasty things when you're not around. You know, I remember being 10 or 11, being called the N-word in school and getting suspended because I got upset about it. I'm from ghetto.
Yeah.
I'm from the ghetto, but I went to a Catholic school growing up because I was young and I'm a gifted athlete or whatever. So you kind of want those guys. They when you can play sports, they just, education is just different. I hate
then
that
they
too.
Like, yeah, and then they like that you're tall.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Then
yeah,
they're not scared.
Yeah, this motherfucker tall, he could jump. Okay, great, right? So I'm the poorest kid in school, right? Mm-hmm. And I live in the ghetto, and all these kids definitely don't live in the ghetto. So, like, I'm the first kid picked up. I'm picked up at, like, 6:10, 6:15. And before, it's 30 minutes, 40 minutes before they pick up another kid. I mean, that's how far away. Right. So, like, mm-hmm. I'm definitely different. And I remember getting called the N-word and getting suspended because I got mad about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? And that little boy's going to have to grow up. And he's 14 years old. And he's going to be 22 one day. You know, he's going to be 28 one day. And, you know, what is that conditioning done to him? How has that shaped his world at that moment? We don't know. What type of person does that make him at 26, 27? We don't know. You know, it's easier, you know, to raise strong children and repair broken men. So
that's
absolutely
true. Yeah.
So what the hell happens to him when he has to live life in the world that sees him that way? You know, how does that reshape the way he sees himself? That's what Hair Like Basketball was all about. It's like, yo, man, we got to love ourselves because in this world, it's not designed for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not designed for us to look at ourselves and see ourselves as the hero or see ourselves as, it's just in entertainment and all of those mediums reflect that. The world is going to continually remind you of this fact, you know.
Yeah.
So if we don't do it, no one will. And that's what it was about. It was like, fuck it. I'm about to love myself so much that I'm going to sing in front of y'all. And yeah, I know I've been rapping over Dilla beats. And I know J Dilla's mom show love to my last project. And I know, like, hip hop wise, yeah. But fuck all that. Like, and I don't care if y'all laugh. And I don't care however y'all feel. I mean, the people dug it. But, you know, I wasn't about to hold myself back. And I wasn't about to leave anything on the table. And I wasn't about to, you know, I was going to be 100% with myself as a man, as a person. And as an artist, you know.
Yeah.
That's
I'm lucky you did.
About.
I'm happy you did because actually that was my favorite song on that album called Power, where you sang. And especially especially the line $20,000 watch won't buy you more hours, but look into the mirror and see your power.
Heaven. Picture me rolling with my partners in the middle of the Dead Sea, scrolling in a mobster. God reigns supreme like Dada, me, Dolce & Gabbana, you, your Zara. Papa E, grip to 40, meet your Saha. At the coffee table, all his fables leave you nada. Telling me, sue for the devil, and it's my pride. When wanting God's presence, all them labels, they mean nada. Thine. Gucci band-aids trying to hide the scar. Hazel contacts in the IRO. Paint a perfect picture to the sky, your flowers. It's all black and white. Silent cries from all. Summer's for the sinners, the falls for the righteous. Civilize the devil each time that I write this. Trying to keep it 300, turn boys Leonidas. It's only food for thought, don't get caught in the itis. Cause a $20,000 watch won't buy you more hours. But look into the mirror and you'll see your power, your power. Gunshots in the air, your power. Gunshots in the air.
I love that one so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, because that's the truth. We're all like chasing money, but for what? That really doesn't buy you any more hour in this life. And
Your
true power is within you, and you don't even need validation, or you don't need nobody to, give that power to you. It's already there.
Yeah, and no one can take it away if you recognize you have it.
True.
Right? No one gave it to you, so they can't take it away, right? So it's like, shit, I know rich people that are fucking miserable, like miserable. I know, fucking miserable, horrible. The life, the grind and the chase for success has definitely spoiled the taste of life in their mouths, right? So these people are fucking horrible. But, and I'm over here, kind of broke, I guess. And I'm fucking happy. Fucking happy, bro.
Like, perfect.
I don't even care, you know? Like, I'm not even going to get on here and be hip-hop and act like I've got money or whatever. Like, no, I'm all right. I'm fucking broke, trying to make it happen like everybody else. You know what I'm saying? But
actually, it's freeing. It's freeing to know you can have fun without the money, and then the money on top is just additional. Like, it's okay to have, but you know you can do without.
Yeah, because I feel like once I get all that money, I'll still be kind of bored anyway. I'll just have like a way nicer home studio, but I won't be going out a lot still.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, I'm still going to be who I am. Like, I feel like knowing myself and loving the person that I am, and not only that, but loving the person that I was too, and loving the person that I hopefully become, like the idea of who I'm about to become, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Money can't enhance any of that shit.
True.
Cause if you weren't happy now, you won't be happy when it comes.
Absolutely.
You'll have so many problems that you'll have to deal with then. You'll wish you didn't have the money. You'll wish you didn't have the fame. You know? Like, for real. You'll wish you didn't have any of that shit. You know, you're gonna look up it. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Don't worry. I just read a quote today from Eminem, who said, actually, he feels really horrible since he had money because he doesn't know who to trust anymore. He doesn't really have friends. He cannot even trust family. So he feels really lonely.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a friend to talk to since then. And yeah, that sounded really sad.
How could he? How could he? I mean, he's rich and he's Eminem. So everybody he meets, everybody he's met since 97 is Eminem. They know him as Eminem. They know that, okay, that's Eminem. He's rich. He's a rapper. And let me try to get in his good graces because, well, shit, that's Eminem. He's rich. He's a rapper, right? So nobody has met him under the guise of him just being Marshall in a very long time.
Yeah.
You know? And shit, after a while of being Eminem, the people who once knew Marshall and once loved Marshall, they start to resent Eminem. You understand what I'm saying? Like, after 20 years of friendship, then they start resenting Eminem. So then now they leave. So the real friends that you had, now they're gone. You know, it's hard for people, you know, in the spotlight, in that place too, you know? And if you're not set as who you are as a person before you get there,
mm-hmm.
it all crumbles along the way. Not saying this about Eminem, you know what I'm saying? Because shit, last thing I want is a fucking Eminem diss.
He doesn't
fuck around. Like, he doesn't care. Like, he'll fucking battle anybody. He's like, if you're famous, I'll kill you if you say my name. If you're not famous, no one knows you, I'll still kill you if you say my name. So, like, no joke, buddy.
No. He's just like, his quote came to my mind when we were talking about
this. I totally get it. It's the truth, though. Like, who is he going to meet that's not going to know he's Eminem and is not going to treat him like he's Eminem? Nobody. True. So who's going to actually love and care about him? Like, it's rough, man. It's rough, you know. And he's also from a time, Eminem's a much older artist. You know, he's from a time where there was no Instagram, you know. So.
True, yeah.
Whew, like, invasion of privacy and everything. His world gets really small. He can do whatever he wants, and his world gets small. It's rough for him. And people like that.
Yeah. So we were talking about, like, you getting more or allowing yourself to be more diverse and not caring about, like, genres or...
Yeah, well, just allowing myself to be more so myself, you know? Like, I always sung. I always was a singer. So, you know, being this hardcore rapper was never, like, always going to be the thing.
Yeah, and actually, I love that. It's very diverse. Like, I've put all of your albums in one playlist and just shuffled. So, yeah, and I felt like it got more diverse with each album. And now, last year, you released Smoke Break.
Yeah.
And, oh, wow, there you have this song, My Side Story, where it reminded me of Raheem Devon, like, even more soulful song, and you sang. And then there's the song Move, which kind of sounds like, some XXX, like, really sad, and you really get in there in the feeling.
Yeah.
Wow. So you got really even more diverse.
Yeah.
I love that about your music. Yeah. That's really
good. I appreciate that. You're making me blush, and I'm brown as hell. I'm so brown, you know? So you, like, you make brown boys blush, you're, like, doing a good job, right? So I'm serious. Like, I fucking love Move. Move is probably the most political type song on the record, kind of diving into, like, societal ills. I love that you said Raheem Devon, because my mom used to play him, like, all the time. Like,
me too. Yeah, that's why I know. Like, okay.
Let me fill you up. Baby, let me turn you up. Hey, you can have it your way. You can have it your way. That's that shit. That's that shit. Shout out to Raheem Devon, man.
Yeah.
That's a good name. I ain't heard that in a minute. But I love that song. That My Side Story. It started as a piano loop that my keyboard player from my band sent me, and I had it for like a year before I actually ever did anything with it. And then just kind of had a friend of mine put, like, some bass drums and kicks on it, and it kind of turned into something great. But I had already had this song to the piano loop. So thing about this, I'm not saying this to make myself look like I'm something amazing or whatever, but I don't write a lot, right? I do carry a lot of songs around in my head for a while, because I might work on a song for 6 months in my head without ever touching a pen or paper, just reworking things. It'll just be in my head, and I'll be carrying the loop, the melody, the lyrics, the cadence. I'll fucking tweak something for months or weeks at a time in my head before I even go to lay it down, right? So I had that in my head, full song, for about a year before I actually ever recorded it.
Wow.
Shout out to my boy Alex, Uncle Alex, who, keyboard player that sent that loop. But I had, it all came when I had first moved to the West Coast. So I was totally separated from all my friends, didn't have any recording equipment, didn't know anybody in Vegas to record. I was kind of lost. I was going through a little bit of depression too, because if I can't really work and create, I kind of get in a weird place, you know, because I have no release, right? So like I was just really hating everything out here. I didn't know anybody, didn't have any music, and I had a bunch of songs in my head that I kind of had recorded. That was one of them, you know, so, but when I was able to finally like get into it and record it. I'm glad you like that song, man, because it's like it's one of my favorites that I've done. I felt like I was singing really well on that song.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I felt like I was giving it on that song. You know? Thank you for that one. That was cool because most people kind of like, I don't think they kind of glance over that. Like, but that song is like my thing because I feel like it would have made my mom proud. Like, I don't feel like if I was singing that in the house as a kid, they wouldn't have told me to shut up. Like, nah, they would be like, yeah, that sounds good. Keep singing. So yeah, I fucks with that song.
Yeah. At first, when I read the album title, Smoke Break, I thought it was like, yeah, it's a pretty long smoke break. But it's not about a smoke break,
no.
Which I noticed when I watched the movie. You have like a movie like yeah. with it.
Yeah, short film.
Yeah, really, really cool. And
man, thank you.
Yeah, after that, I understood like it's actually a break from, yeah, being the smoke in the movie.
Yeah.
But please, just explain a little bit more.
Well, I love that because, you know, Smoke Break is my directorial debut. I wrote. I starred in that movie. I'm so proud of that short film. It's my first shot at trying to do filmmaking. And I personally felt like I did a pretty cool job at it.
Great job. Yeah.
You know, it's about an assassin, but just about people, period, right? Because we're all killers. We're trying to make it, you know. We're trying to do what we got to do, you know. But it's about an assassin who has a child on the way. And just want to change his life, you know. He's tired of doing what he does, you know. He's tired of hiding it from his wife. He's tired of hiding it from his friends. He just wants to lead a normal life and not be, you know, this killer that he's grown into, you know. So he's got to do his last job before he leaves out of the business. And the last job is a rough one for him being an expecting father because the last job is his boss asking him to kill his very own son. The boss had a discrepancy caused by his own son, and I guess the relationship isn't what a normal father and son relationship should be because he's asking me to kill him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we plan on doing a sequel to it because I want to develop the story more and kind of bring it full circle, but. You know, it's just about what will you do to live the life that you want to live? You know, what price will you pay? You know, because, you know, we're all chasing something. I don't hang around with comfortable people. They're just comfortable where they're at. And if everybody around me and any person that's trying to go forward, they want more out of life. So what will you do in order to get that? What are you willing to do? You know, what are you willing to change the life that you currently have for the life that you want? You know,
yeah, totally understand. Yeah,
it's just real life choices that, you know, we're all going to become faced with at some point or another in our lives, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And in the end, you know, he has to choose his family. He has to do what he has to do for himself.
Yeah.
And he ultimately does that. The soundtrack is obviously the Smoke Break album. You got all the songs playing in the background. So. You know, it was just an idea. I didn't want to do five music videos either, so I felt
it was perfect. Yeah, it was like the whole album. You listen to it differently after you watch the movie. Like before, when you just listen to the songs, you have your own images, and now you have like a totally different view on it. And yeah, it was cool. Yeah,
tight. And yeah, definitely.
Something else I liked that you were addressing it in the beginning is toxic masculinity. You said hairstyles are not gender specific.
Gender specific.
Yeah, I love
Hell
that.
Hell nah, they're not gender specific. I wear China. I call them China bumps because I got a friend named China Bump. She had the hairstyle, so I kind of stole it from her. Like, I don't care. I just fucking wear my China bumps. Like I do what I want, you know. And I remember, and it kind of crazy because I remember when I first started doing that. And I just like put my hair in buns real quick and left out the door. And I went to this like event or whatever, or ended up at this event and seen like dudes looking at me like, man, you don't quiet your toxic masculinity. That could get you hurt in here, man, you know. But I just, boys, we grow up with different ideas. And I'm so careful about that shit with my son. I do not play that shit. If anybody comes around speaking that boys shouldn't do this and this crap, or oh my God, I lose my fucking mind, because that's the stuff that's really holding us back and really hurting us as men.
Yeah,
and
like
our relationship with women and how we view women and the lack of respect we have for women, that toxic shit is so bad. And I, as black men, we grow up with it even, I feel like sometimes even more, like the machismo, macho shit. Oh my goodness, it's rough, and yeah. I hate it. So yeah, that's what I like that you picked up on that. Yeah, hell yeah. Fuck that toxic masculinity shit, man. Wear your hair how you want, man, you know? Like, I'm in this era, man, from this era where black boys paint their nails black. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Do that shit, black boy. Yeah. Like, do what you want, man, you know?
Absolutely. Like, I love that this generation of musicians, like the younger ones, like Jaden Smith, and then there's this from Chicago. I don't remember. They're more like dressing like colors, which are typically female and all this, and they wear dresses, and I love it because, you know, you have to, like, as men, you have to free yourself too. We freed ourselves as women, and we started wearing pants at one point, which was looked at as male, and now right. We have to reverse that too. Like, you have to free yourself.
Reading something where this lady back in, like, I don't know, 1940 something or 30 something, like, was arrested because she wore pants to court. What the fuck?
What the fuck?
That shit just happened. What the fuck? Like, that's how we were as a society not too long ago. And, like, there's still societal rules that govern our daily actions without us even knowing, you know? You got girls that be like, oh, I'm not gonna do that because a lady should do that. Like, what the fuck? No, do what you want. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Or in the corporate world, you have to, for example, like, it was mandatory as a woman that you wear makeup.
Mm.
Why? Like, why?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. Mandatory that you wear makeup. Yeah. Like, for what? Do you know how fucking long it takes to put on makeup? You're like, I've had girlfriends, man, you know, and I've watched them, and I'm like, oh, that's a long fucking process. I don't think I would want to do that every day either.
Like, absolutely. Like, I used to do that at school, like, when I just loved doing it, and I had all the time to myself. But since I've been a mother, I mean, I don't do that every day. And I don't have to force it. Yeah.
Who the fuck has the time to do that shit? Like, if you ever try to, you even get mad. Like, motherfucker, if you ever try to contour a cheekbone, man, that shit takes mad time.
Yeah, I'm not getting ready for the Oscars. Yeah.
Yeah, that shit takes mad. Yeah. I'm going to work, motherfucker. Like, I shouldn't be doing any of this shit. Like, oh, man, it's rough. It's rough.
Okay, like, we can include it in the working hours, then I'll do it.
yeah, please. Like, if you're gonna include my get time ready, I'm fine with that. And I think if jobs are gonna mandate that, they should do that. Like, don't worry, we'll pay you an extra hour for your makeup time. We
and
understand
for the makeup
how much
too, because makeup is expensive too.
Fuck yeah it is, man. You ever bought? I mean, I've tried to buy a girl Sephora and stuff and got cursed out because apparently you're not supposed to buy Sephora. You're supposed to buy the Mac. How the fuck am I supposed to know? I don't know shit about this. You know, so it's weird, but there's a lot of rules that, you know, kind of lock in men and women from being, you know, as great as they can. You know, I feel that, you know, you can wear what you want, just don't disrespect people, and you shouldn't be disrespected either. You can do what you want, just don't disrespect and hurt people. And in that case, you also shouldn't be being disrespected or hurt for your choices of doing what you want to do. Like, it's your life, man, and we are not coming back. It's not
true.
We're not
true.
Being that's it, man. That shit is it, yo. Like, people tell you that life is short, but they don't tell you that sometimes, man, life can be long as fuck.
True.
And it's long when you live by other people's rules and you're not living your life fully and freely. When you, that stuff locks you in, so it makes you not want to deal with these type of people, makes you not want to go to these type of places because you're worried about how people look at you, and then it gets to the point where the only person looking at you is your ass, because nobody's worried about your motherfucking ass if you really fucking thought about it.
Absolutely.
No one really cares. Yeah. We all think that they do, you know what I'm saying? So we lock ourselves in, and we just don't, our wings don't spread properly, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's why some people will end up in towns like Rochester and never leave. That's why some people will never become. That's why the dreams die the way they die. That's why I said I'm hope for the hopeless, because I'm from a town full of amazing, talented, beautiful people. I mean, the Eastman School of Music. I mean, per capita, we have the most musically inclined people anywhere in America.
Oh,
per capita. You know, and this is documented because we have one of the best top three, top four music school on the face of the planet. So when you have that, you have a more higher percentage of people who do music. You have this school and all these students walking around, and then you got the people that live in the city that do music too. So you have a lot of amazing creative people, but dreams die there because people don't grow. You know, people don't leave. People.
There should be more artists from Rochester than like known, you know. Like,
yeah, we're working, but it's hard, man. It's a hard, hard place. You know what I'm saying? It's a place where you may not be so proud to be from Rochester. You know what I'm saying? Because self-hate's a motherfucker. And when you grow up with it, you know, you don't like yourself. You don't like where you're from. You know, you just want to be something different and something other, because everywhere you look in turn, the world is telling you to not like yourself. You're not good enough. To not love yourself. I mean, it's rough, man. It's fucking rough.
Mm.
You know, it's fucking rough. And it's a bleak outlook on life for a lot of people. Some of us, you know, are able to get from out of that and figure it out and go on about our business. And we won't, you know, we refuse to let people box us in and lock us in. But for other people, for the majority of people, you know, that's their story.
Yeah.
You know.
So you said you plan, you plan a sequel to Smoke Break?
Yeah.
And what else movie. Are you up to next? Like, what else?
I have a single dropping at the end of this month or the beginning of next month in a video. It's called Tempo. It's produced by my brother, Kizza Kaylee. He's done most of my music. Him and my bro K-Biz, they have been like my co-pilots and like kind of like the evolving of my music and where it's gone, because they've sonically helped craft the soundscapes for it. You know, I don't produce or anything. I play piano
good.
And stuff.
It's good that you shout out, because I love so many of the samples and the beats.
Right.
I love that you gave a shout out to them, because they're a major, like, they make the music really great. And to me, some of the music reminded me of Kanye West, and some, like, of Kendrick Lamar, just by the beats. Like, because it had many samples and by the type of the beat, like, the rhythm and all of it. So I really love their music, like, the production of it.
They're my brothers, man, and I have to always shout them out and do a better job of it as well, because I don't think producers and me as a songwriter, I don't think us get, you know, we don't get, you know, the shine that we deserve, you know, because people are that producers run this shit, man. Like they make everything go, you know, and they're in their rooms banging away, trying to create stuff just like we're in our room late at night trying to write things, you know, so we go hand in hand. And those dudes really, 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 really helped propel that for me, you know. They the ones that showed me where I was gonna go, you know, and with the music, you know, because you can only do what you can do on that beat. You can't
Absolutely.
Rap. It's they're the ones, you know. So together with picking out crafting, and it's like they were willing to follow me on that journey because I was doing something, you know, that we really hadn't really heard. You know, I was trying to, you know, my own sound, my own style. I call it soul hop, because I feel like when you hear it, it makes your soul jump around. You know what I'm saying? Like, so people, like, I knew I was doing something different, and they were willing to float with me on that journey, man. So I appreciate them, and they're still here with me, you know, sending me records. And every time, it seems like one of those records is exactly where I want to go with this music. So I know, like, when I'm recording, I always got to, like, have Kizza and K-Biz around somewhere, you know, because they got the sound. No matter who I'm working with or who, I don't care who it is, I know that it's always going to come back to them too, because they organically have the sound that I'm always looking for. We were made to make music with each other.
That's nice. Yeah, it really feels like it, and it's good that you have them. It's really good. You can tell even, like, because it fits together. It just kind of belongs together.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad that you were able to pick that out, because I've always said that. And I appreciate, like I said, I can't say it enough to K-Viz and Kizzy, you know, like, they're off, and I think K-Viz is, like, trying to start a family now, you know, he's grown up, he's a little older than me, so, like, he's out doing his thing, you know, with this lady, I love them, you know, and everybody's just trying to figure it out, but I can't wait until I get me a big old check so I can kidnap them boys. I can kidnap those boys, and then we can all move, and we can fucking make music all day, because, like, not for nothing, I love everybody, but I love making music with them too.
Nice.
More than fucking anybody, really.
So, yeah, we mentioned a few names before, but just let me know, what are your biggest hip-hop influences, or not, well, music influences, I guess.
Okay, so of all time, right, it's gonna go like this, right? My daddy in his 60s, right? And I grew up with my father in my house, which is a rarity from where I'm from, because we already know how things go, right?
Yeah.
But I grew up hearing stuff that 60-year-old men are supposed to play. Earth, Wind, and Fire, and Sly and the Family Stone. Oh, fucking love Sly Stone so much. I want to meet him somehow, some way. I want to meet Sly Stone. He's a huge influence. But Stevie Wonder, Tower of Power. So all the soul and the funk guys, Parliament Funkadelic, George Clinton, and it goes on and on, Fela Kuti. But when I started on my own musical journey and discovering what I like and kind of crafting my own ear, it was everything from Donny Hathaway. You know, you hear him every year. He's got that Christmas song, that song that plays during Christmas every year. And as a kid, I always noticed that, hang on the mistletoe, that just felt different than every other Christmas song I would hear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, damn, I don't know why that song feels so much better, but it's the soul, it's the grit. It's the pain. It's everything. And I didn't notice as I get older. So it's Donnie. And then it goes on to, like, Alanis Morissette, you know, with the rawness of how she wrote her songs and how she was able to be naked, totally naked in front of her audience.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm here to remind you.
Absolutely.
And those songs still give me chills all these years later.
Me too. I just recently heard one other song, not You Ought to Know, but another song, one of this album, and I just remembered 1996, and oh my god, yeah,
being
so intense,
kid, yeah. Oh my goodness, this little firecracker.
Absolutely, like, yeah.
He's like 5'1" or some shit. Like, yeah. He was killing the shit, and she still kills. And I've never met her, and I would love to meet her, you know, like, so it goes to that, because that's the rawness, right?
Yeah.
People have influenced me in different ways, but truth be told, my influences and my key influences as an artist aren't really singers or rappers at all. You know, I'm influenced by Jay-Z just as much as any other kid that grew up, the time that grew up, right? And I'm influenced by Nas and, you know, and everybody, and hell, I'm influenced by XXXTentacion, you know what I'm saying, who's younger, right? So but truth be told, my style and my way I do things is influenced by pastors, reverence, right? So I grew up watching a great man of God by the name of Samuel McCree. He's dead now. He's been dead since I was a kid, but I remember this man as a child preaching at this church that I used to go to as a kid. I was really young, and I used to watch it. And I know as kids, we either going to sleep in church and we don't want to be there. And true, that was all true. I never wanted to go there. I don't go to church now as it stands. But I always realized that what he would I'd be up. 8 years old. I don't know why, but it's just when this, I listened and everyone else did. The way he commanded an audience, the way he made grown-ass men just scream and shout and run around the place, catching the Holy Ghost or whatever, just by feeling the words that he was preaching. And he's saying the same words in the same book that any other preacher is going to preach.
Mm-hmm.
It's conviction. It's conviction. It's where I learned to not sing meaningless lyrics, to never play games with someone's ear, right? If you're going to listen to this song, I got to give you something. I'm not going to bullshit with you, right? You've given me your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You've given me your time and your willingness. You've given me your ear. So I'm going to give you something great. So it's been guys like that. My grandfather was a bishop as well, right? So it's been guys like that. It's been the conviction and carrying yourself, you know, in a certain way that when you do speak, when you do sing, when you do rap, when you do open your mouth, people receive your words differently because of the type of person and the type of respect that you command. Just being who you are, putting your whole spirit and your soul into the things that you're saying. You know what I'm saying? Never forsaking one for the other. Never doing that. So I learned that from those guys. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
More so than I've learned from a Jay-Z. And I'm not like a religious guy or anything like that. Like, I smoke mad weed. I'm super ratchet. I turn up. You know, so like I'm not that guy. I'm not high and mighty. I'm just saying that those people, those men showed me how to convey a message.
This is amazing. Like, I've never had this answer and I'm still thinking of it. It's amazing. It's true. And I know what you mean. It's like rather like really feeling things and giving that out, bringing that out.
Yeah, you gotta be serious. You gotta be serious, man. You can't be playing.
Amazing.
You know, so like that's what they taught me. They taught me to never play games with that shit. You know, because you know, not for nothing, you can be in charge of someone's soul.
Mm-hmm. True.
Because they looking for something. They want to hear something. You know what I'm saying? I've had people, you know, inbox. I'm not like the most social media guy. I actually don't care about social media at all. I think the more it tries to connect us, the more distant it's made us from each other as a whole. You know, it's tried to make the world smaller, but it really women hanging out and they're just taking pictures and on Snapchat the whole time. And it's just like, all right, cool. I guess this date is over, you know, and been with people and been with friends who can't do anything without taking a picture of it. We can't even enjoy these worlds anymore. I'm going to, it was Lauryn Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Lauryn Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Whole damn crowd has cell phones up. And I get it. Why does the cell phone stay up the whole entire time? I'm not coming to watch fucking Lauryn Hill through a 5-inch screen.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah,
I'm about to watch this whole stage.
Yeah. And and you cannot even capture that. And then again, you will never watch this anyways.
Ever.
You will never look at
it. Post it for people who work here. Is that what you want? Is it the validation of the likes? Is it the like thing that's getting you? Like, I don't get it. Like, you're going to ruin an opportunity to see
one of
God's greatest for that.
Absolutely true. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't get it. So social media is just not, you know, my thing. But people reach out and people don't tell me things, you know. It's like, yo, man, I was listening to this, man, and I appreciate you, you know, for saying that thing. I don't know these people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I will fucking take my time to talk to them anytime.
Yeah.
And I've had people reach out to me that were going through some shit at the moment. You know what I'm saying? And just a total stranger being an ear for them. A stranger that I'm not a stranger to them because, you know, I don't know that they spend time and listen to my music. They're not from where I'm from.
Yeah.
You know, just they just found it and they liked it. And I got 600 followers on Twitter. Like, what the fuck? Like, I tweet once a week. I don't care about any of that stuff. I like to live my life. You know, I'm a father and I like to be in the moment and be in life right now. You know what I'm saying? So like, but for those people to reach out and say those things, I understand how powerful these words are. You know, it doesn't matter that I'm not famous. And I think some indie artists, new artists, we kind of sell ourselves short. Like, man, I'm not famous. You know, I'm not this. But shit, man, it might mean the world to somebody. You know what I'm saying? It might absolutely mean the world to somebody. I got a dude, what I want to say is a super fan of mine, right? He's in a wheelchair. And every single time I go to New York City, I see him. I don't know why. I don't know how. I fucking see this guy every time. Every time, it's like, man, I got to show you love because I know how much you love my music because I see you. Like, I see how you support me online, right? I'm not from New York City. I'm from upstate, which is about four hours away. Rochester's about 4.5 hours away from New York. And I got a lot of friends there, right? And I got a good following in New York City. And that rides so hard for me. And I'll see him at like events that I'll go to in New York. And I'll see him at Afropunk because I go to Afropunk every year. Shout out to them, you know. And like, I'll see him and it's the same thing. He just goes crazy when he sees me, like I'm fucking famous. And it's makes me. And I absolutely love him. I mean, he doesn't know that I love him, but he's like he's a person that I'm going to always remember for the amount of love that he's always shown. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, man, it's real. You have to be serious with the words that you say, and not take for granted that people are lending your ear, their time, and you know maybe parts of their soul at that moment because they could be going through hell, and you know you could be some type of relief for them at that moment. You know, so yeah, I take it very seriously. I do, and those men taught me how to.
Yeah,
those men taught me how to.
Thank you very much for this interview. At the end of every interview, I ask two questions. They're for everyone. So,
okay.
The first one is, what was your greatest musical experience? It can either be your own or, visiting a concert or hearing some music, whatever.
I'll give you one. Okay, meeting Malik Youssef. At ASCAP and my relationship, you know, just happened to just meet one of my idols is with the pen. You know, he's wrote so many things and he's helped craft a lot of great songs and a lot of songs that are part of the soundtrack of our lives over the last couple of years, 10 years, right?
So
meet him.
When did you meet him?
This was 2 years ago at ASCAP conference. End up meeting his artist, a friend of mine, who's actually my son's godfather now, the legendary Fire Man. So I met Fire. He's from Chicago, producer, songwriter, amazing artist out of Chicago. He's worked with a lot of people, helped Vic Mensa, Kanye West, you name it. He's done a lot of good things, right?
I met him. I know Malik Youssef, and I know so little people who know him, so I'm so happy you said that, because that's like one of my favorite albums is his Good Morning, I think. Is it?
Yeah.
Good. Oh, my God. And there, the song, I think it's called GEM, Good Enough to Win.
Yeah.
I love that song. And it sucks it's not on iTunes. Like, I have to listen to it on a CD. We still use CDs.
I'm like, man, we got to get it out on streaming, man. It got to be on Spotify, man. People like you, man. You're a god out here. He needs
absolutely.
To, like, he needs to know that, and he knows that, but he doesn't know, like, yo, dog, you're a god, bro. Like, people really like niggas. People love you out here, bro. You know,
I actually made a T-shirt out of it. Like he said, the mightiest oak had to go through dirt. And the butterfly had to go through hurt. And I love this line so much. And the whole song, oh my God.
Yeah, he's the wordsmith. One of the greatest to ever do it, you know. So meeting him and be able to grow that relationship over the last couple of years, you know, is definitely right. But also touching on that Lauryn Hill thing, right? So I remember the year that she was headlining at Afropunk, and when her set came on, there was a sound difficulty, right? Mm-hmm. There was sound difficulty. You couldn't really hear it, so it kind of messed up the experience, right? Mm-hmm. But that earlier that day, I happened to just come through Commodore Barry Park, where they have Afropunk at in Brooklyn. And I was walking through, and no one stopped me or anything, right? I was, like, in the park at, like, 12, 11, just walking around Brooklyn. And it just let me in. So I was in there, and Lauryn Hill was sound checking. Mm-hmm. And I got to see her sound check, and she ran through her sound check, like, for real, for real. Holy shit. I got, like, mm-hmm. my own private Lauryn Hill concert. Mm-hmm. That was next level. Next level. Just sitting on the grass. It may be like 12 people out here. People are just laying on blankets. It's hours before they open up the gates for Afropunk. And honestly, it might have been about 10 or 11 in the morning, to be honest. Things and stuff. And I got to see that. That was amazing. I've had a few, but to see Miss Lauryn do that and really run through it, like, she was going hard as fuck. Like, yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Amazing. I've never seen her live. I just recently watched a concert from Basel, I think. I watched it on TV with my son late at night. Yeah, that was really cool. But never live.
Yeah. It's an experience.
I can imagine.
Was kicking that shit. And I mean, it was short. Don't get me wrong. It was probably about 20 minutes, 15 minutes sound check, but it was full. It was full fledged. Like, everybody, she was playing and singing and making sure it was right, which is also why I don't understand why the show sound wasn't up to par.
True.
But whatever. That's always been strange to me. But
you still have that experience, so.
Because I didn't have to see it through a sea of phones. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't get that.
Yeah,
I've been so angry to not be able to get that, you know.
Yeah,
that was a good one. That was one for the books. And I didn't take my phone out. But this is the thing that tripped me out is mm-hmm. that when I was walking past it, and I, cause it, not for nothing, I'm walking and like I fucking seen Pharoah Monch, like mm-hmm. just walking through the park as well. And it's a funny story of Pharoah, because like the last time I had ran into him, we were in Atlanta at A3C, and he had the most beautiful woman with him. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling him about it that night. I was like, yo, bro, that's crazy. Like, she's incredible. And then when we see each other again in Brooklyn at that time, and I was like, yo, you remember that? He's like, yo, she was in Cirque du Soleil. So we had like that moment, and then mm-hmm. we're both watching Lauryn Hill, and then he had to go off and shit. So I, mm-hmm. but this is the thing, throughout that whole moment, I never even thought about taking my phone out. Mm-mm. It wasn't even a thing that crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Was sit your ass on this grass and watch mom sing to you. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, sit down and listen to your mother. Like, that's really what it was. Like, it was never a moment. I mean, I'm telling you, I probably sat on my phone. It was never a moment of take my phone out and get this video so I could post it, so people that didn't pay mm-hmm. to come down here to see this can see this. Like, true. No, fuck no. This is just a story that I'm going to tell on a podcast later on. Right? And I'm going to keep it to myself until then. But that was tops. Malik and watching Lauryn Hill soundcheck, but go full-fledged. Like, yeah.
Nice.
Like, cool shit.
Nice. Okay, and the last question is, in what way can hip hop be a healer? Can be to you or the world?
Shit. Hip hop's done more for people, race relations, and society. I feel they've done just as much for us as the civil rights movement did. And just think about how many people have jobs in hip hop. How many people have a life in hip hop? How much love has been spread from hip? Think about how hard it is for someone to be racist if they've listened to a Nas album. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
True.
Like, race relations has been healed by few things: sports mm-hmm. and music. And hip hop has done that and music more so than any other genre. I mean, it's really brought black and white kids, brown and white kids, brown and Asian kids, they brought us all together in a way that unifies us more than a color could, more than anything could, because, you know, you just know that, you know, Illmatic was incredible. Mm-hmm. You know that To Pimp a Butterfly was incredible. And you don't got to be white or black to know that, right? Yeah. You know that. You feel that. When you go to a concert, you see everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, hip-hop and music is so universal. We can go to a Wu-Tang concert and see Japanese kids that can't speak English but know every single word of Cream. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That healing component is so on display with stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
So on display with stuff like that. You know, it's, hip hop has done a lot. I wonder what this world would look like without hip hop. You know?
That's a very good question.
I think
yeah.
it would be weird as fuck. I think it would be really weird. You know, the fashion would be different, the sports would be, everything would be absolutely different if this music didn't come into each and every one of our lives. If this culture didn't evolve out of that music and it died, you know, with, I don't know, the deaths of Biggie and Pac or whatever. I mean, hip hop has a tormented and turbulent past and story that we're all still writing because it's only 40 years old, you know.
Yeah.
So we're also trying to figure out what this thing is and what's going to go, because there's never been a music genre that a culture formed from it mm-hmm. before. So we're all just trying to figure out our place in hip hop. You know what I'm saying? But hip hop has definitely done, you know, some wonders to heal some of the evils of the world. And it's just done it through unifying us from beats and rhymes. Simple as hell. Beats and rhymes is unified the world more so than damn near any other product, any other thing that this world could produce. It's definitely because everybody can't shoot a jump shot, so basketball is only unifying to motherfuckers that can dribble. You know, everybody can't play sports. You know what I'm saying? But everybody got ears. Everybody yeah. got souls and hearts. You know, and you know, it's just some undeniable facts. You know, that's going to bring us all together and continue to bring us together, because there's still great art being made. You know what I'm saying? There's still amazing art being made. I tell you this ill story, and it's one of my favorite things that's happened to me over the last couple, right? I had a friend of mine that I hadn't seen in real long. He hit me on Facebook, something I don't even really use. Hit me on Facebook. He said, "Hey, man, every time I meet a girl that I'm interested in, I send her music of things that, you know, I like, and see what type of music she likes, because that's a telltale sign of type of person that they are, right? Type of music that they ingest." And I feel him because I do the same thing. So he said he sent her my music, because he listens to my music. You know what I'm saying? I mean, mm-hmm. he's an old friend. I haven't really seen him in a long time. We haven't spoken maybe 10 years, whatever, right? But mm-hmm. he's been supporting in the shadows, you know, and I appreciate him for that, right? So he sent her my music. And this woman was living on the islands. I don't know exactly what island she was from or where she was living at that time, but it was a girl from the islands, and she was getting ready to move to Atlanta. And he sent her my music, and she was like, "I am True Star. I love him. Have you ever heard Hair Like Basquiat?"
So and she knew you already.
Oh, that made me feel so good. But also lets us know exactly what this shit is. You know what I'm saying? It's unifying us all over the world in places that we have never been to. I mean, think about it. You're in Lisbon right now, and I didn't even know where the fuck that was like 2 weeks ago. You know?
Absolutely.
And we're having this combo. So that's the power of hip-hop right there. You asking how yeah. it could heal? Right yeah. there. Right yeah. there. You know, the connection. You know, you can only... People fear what they don't understand and what they don't know. But if we're all connected... You know, not like how social media tries to connect us. No, truly connected, right? Yeah. We're all connected. Then we can all have a chance to understand each other. And then there's less fear. You know what I'm saying? And then it's more
Absolutely.
Understanding. You know, so that's how it's going to heal it. It's because it's, in my opinion, it's done the best job of trying to heal this world than anything else. Nothing else has done it the way hip hop has.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah. And especially because through music, you can talk about what you've seen, which you wouldn't in sports. You know, in sports, I just see you hoop just like the guy next to you. But yeah, with music, yeah. I know, like, you let me know where you're from or, you know, what you've seen. And I can feel that. And you usually wouldn't tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shared story. It's a shared experience. Because because then you realize that you've been through some of the things that they've went through. But I don't know what it feels like to get up at 4 a.m. in the morning and go shoot jump shots. You can tell me that was a part of your grind, but I can't share that experience because I don't know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. But I do know what it feels like to be hungry. And I do know what it feels like to heat up the house with the oven. And I do know what it feels. I do know what that shit feels like. I do know what it feels like to be from the ghetto. I do know what it feels like to get my heart broken. I do know these things. And we can all share in those experiences. You know, but we can't share in Kobe Bryant's experience because none of us has ever been 6'6". You know, it's just true that it was a.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to do that with sports, but music and hip hop in particular, specifically, does it better than anyone else.
Wow.
Anyone else. And that's how it does.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am True Star. Thank you so much for the interview, for your answer, and your music.
Yeah. Shouts out to Lisbon and everybody listening on this podcast. Shout out to you for reaching out. Totally appreciate you. If you ever need anything, whatever, reach out to me. I'm going to be here. And yeah, to all the listeners, man, go check out my music, man. Help me pay my bills, man. Spotify, Apple Music. And I mean, let's just get down to the gist of shit. Let's not even bullshit, all right? This is how I pay my bills. If you go listen to my music, I'll be able to pay my bills more. That's it. It's very simple.
Very simple.
Spotify, Apple Music, IamTrueStar.com. Thank you, guys. Be lookout for Tempo dropping this later this month, I think, or early next month. The video is coming out as well. And just more and more music, more videos, more singles. A lot of more everything, man. More art, more life, more love. You know, I don't eat meat anymore, so I'm fucking, you know, more health. Fucking everything is great.
Nice. Actually, your song 26 Inches is on my playlist this month, and I'm sure I have more songs on the coming up playlists.
Yes. Yeah. Shout out to Ishmael Raps on that song as well. He's an incredible artist from Rochester, and he's going to blow up really, really soon. So, like, yeah, man, shouts out to you, man. I appreciate you for showing love and support. And like I said, if you ever need, reach out to me. I'll be here.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. So,
have a beautiful Sunday.
You too.
Maybe go back to bed.
No. I got to work out. I got to get a workout, and I'm up fully.
Okay.
Time to shake off last night.
Okay, great. Okay.
Thank you very much. Take care of yourself. Be safe out there.
Take care. Bye-bye.
God. There's a reason why I'm writing this letter. There's a reason why my life ain't together. Heard there's a season when your life should get better. But every season passes right to the letter. Each season passing, it leaves my ass right where I'm at. Don't even know how I'm still together. So it seems, so I sew the seams tight on this leather. Bombastic bomber jackets with patches from war. A cool way to say melanated skin with secret scars. We got baggage galore, bring your bags through the door. Got your gun, keep your word, hope you packed you some drawers. Watch your step out of bags on the floor. In a jungle where the monkeys hang. Strange fruits suck the juice right out the monkey veins. But these new poplar trees make stranger fruit than the old ones. Come take a bite and see the old ones. We can't lose. Natural born sinners. Unnatural